The Super Bowl is mere days away. Taylor Swift just trademarked this sick beat. I have to catch a plane in 3 hours to San Francisco. This is Sports Without Balls.
Holy cow!
A perfect score. 10.4.
He had to the 2-0, now the 2-1. Wide drive!
Hello again, everyone. This is
Sports Without Balls. Hello, friends, family, countrymen. I don't know why I just said that. This is Aaron Foley, your host of Sports Without Balls. We have an exciting, fantastic episode this week that may air a couple days before the Super Bowl. It might air next week. I'm not exactly sure. I've been trying to get this lady on the show since the 80s, even though we just met a couple months ago. No, it's been years now, actually.
A couple years.
This lady, I'm telling you, she's a former professional tennis player, so the podcast is going to be super fun tennis heavy. We're smack in the middle of Australian Open. She is a professor of history at USC, which is one of the best educational facilities in the country. Please welcome my friend Karen Huebner to the show. Hi, Karen.
Glad to be here.
I've got a former professional tennis player and a professor. I think my head's going to pop off in excitement. This is amazing. And this is perfect timing. I was up till 1 in the morning watching both women's semifinals of the Australian Open. The men right now are playing for the semis to get into the final. And it's been some fantastic tennis. And now we've got a tennis pro. I've got a tennis pro in the studio / apartment. Now let's talk about like your family history too, because I want to, you know, it's always like you're always influenced about like what your parents like, what your parents played in big sports families. And your dad was a big professional a tennis player.
Yes, before pro tennis became pro tennis, but as an amateur he was quite successful internationally. Yeah,
that's amazing. Mm-hmm. So you grew up with your dad. You played tennis with your dad growing up.
Yes. I have video of me playing at 3 years old.
Oh my God, that's awesome. And it, you were saying...
Forehands and backhands.
Well, so 3 years old, could you like barely pick up a racket, huh?
I know. Well, it just was put in my hand and it's what he did. And my mom, actually, she was a head pep girl at UCLA.
Awesome. All right, so your dad went to UCLA and played tennis.
Right, and that's where he met my mom. But so we had this whole sports world with my dad being the instructor, the player, the inspiration that way. And then my mom, you know, pushing us that way as a pep girl. And
well, so real quick, let's just talk about pep girl, because that phrase hasn't been on this podcast before. Yeah. What exactly do you mean by pep girl?
Well, she was, she competed with about 2000. It was only thing girls could do, women could do in the 40s, 50s, 60s. Yeah. So until
horrifying.
We're accepted into the sports world.
Yeah. Or just kind accepted of, into the world.
Kind of, like, kind of accepted. But she was, the pep girl was the highest athletic achievement at UCLA for girls.
Wow.
That's what they called them too, girls.
So obviously you also have to be totally athletic to do that.
Totally athletic. And she was actually a ballerina, which was another, arena acceptable for women.
Yeah. And Russians.
Yeah. Women and Russians. And so she competed against about 2,000 women at UCLA for five spots.
Holy crap.
And now they have a squad for each team, a distinct squad. And the skirts were a little lower in the 50s.
Okay. And, which is, you need to be doubly athletic to get through the skirt.
And they were wool.
Oh my God.
Everything was wool.
I can't, I feel like sometimes when we talk about like the history of women, it's like we were Neanderthals.
Yeah.
It's like, just stay in the cave, ladies. Stay in the cave, cover yourself in wool.
We'll make eye contact. We'll tell you when you can come out.
And just scream for the boys.
Yeah, scream for the boys. So that's what she did. She, for UCLA basketball, football, they were number one in the nation when my mom was a pep girl, and I credit that to her.
Of course. What's your mom's name?
Gretchen.
Gretchen. Well, Gretchen, congratulations.
Can I tell you her last name before she got married?
Yeah.
Deffenbach.
No. Say that again.
Gretchen Deffenbach.
Deffenbach. Yeah. What nationality is she?
What do you think?
Eastern European.
German. Yeah.
Same thing.
Although she's mostly Scotch-Irish, but somehow the name Deffenbach
stuck.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want to go with Jones? No, we're staying with Deffenbach. How do you spell that? How much time do you have?
Yeah.
Okay, so your mom's doing the pep.
Yeah.
Which is adorable.
Pepping my dad.
Pepping your dad.
Right.
emotionally pepping your dad. And so your dad is, you were telling me about your dad before we started this podcast, which we'll, of course, we'll repeat. So he was like a champion at UCLA tennis.
Right. He actually went there to play basketball and tennis.
Wow.
But he was convinced that school...
I've got people calling in.
Yeah, already.
The phones are blowing up.
They're all lit up. Your board is lit up.
My board is lit up, you guys. People are calling in, be like, what do you mean pep girl? Can I be a pep girl? Or Erin Foley forgot to turn her ringer off. Either way.
Uh-oh.
Either way. Don't even worry about it. Don't even worry about it.
So yeah, he went to... But then he just stuck with tennis.
Okay.
And he... was full scholarship athlete.
Wow.
Became captain of the tennis team, won NC2A's two team titles, one doubles title.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he was really, really a star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's in that level, I always think it's like, it's different when your parents are athletic and they're like, do whatever you want. But when you're talking like, when you have a parent that's a like basically a professional athlete.
Right.
Or semi-pro, whatever you want to call it, collegiate, you know.
Yeah.
At the top of his game, that competitiveness and that drive, like, mm-hmm. that's why you have a racket when you're 3 years old.
So
you
I have a racket, but I loved it, too. It was,
you
really,
have to love it.
Couldn't
yeah.
get me off the court.
That's so
from
awesome.
From age three on.
Yeah.
So didn't have to push me, even though my mom was
yeah.
quite the pepper.
Yeah. I love that your mom was just excited.
Still is.
She still is.
Watches every practice. She watched every practice.
That's
and
awesome.
And it never felt pressure. I never
yeah.
felt pressure. I just felt she just
yeah.
loved to pep us along.
I just love this word. This will be in the title of the show yeah. for sure. Pep. Everything pepped. Okay, so let's talk about your journey.
Right.
I just like the word journey. It's very dramatic.
Everybody does.
Oh, everybody does. Especially
Bachelor.
The journey. Yes. I don't wanna brag, but Karen and I do watch The Bachelor. It's cheesy goodness. I can't help it. It's just, you know.
I didn't want that to be public knowledge.
Yeah, I'm
but
sorry.
That's okay.
We'll edit it out. okay, so you're playing, you're a kid, and then you're like, at what point do you realize, wait, I think I can do this. Like, I think I can go pro.
Eight.
Yeah. Holy crap.
I decided
crap.
At eight that this is what I wanted to do. That's for sure, yeah.
8 years old. Yeah. So you have a moment when you're eight. I remember being eight, being like, can I finish The Secret Garden by the end of this year? So 8 years old, you're like, holy crap, I'm going to be semi-pro. I want to be pro.
I wanted to be pro. Yeah. And that was right when the women's pro tour, or right before it got underway, you know,
yeah.
with Billie Jean King and the nine.
Yeah. Nine for nine.
Yeah.
Title nine.
Well, no. The women, the nine. Maybe that's why they named it Title Nine.
Hmm.
You just enlightened me into something.
Wait,
anyway.
What
no,
do you
they probably didn't.
What
there
were
nine women who launched the women's professional tour.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And
wait,
and,
who were those nine women? That's okay. Just give
Rosie
us a couple.
Rosie Casals was one.
Okay.
Billie Jean King was the one who inaugurated Valerie Ziegenfuss.
So nine women
yeah.
launched the women's tennis.
And they broke
tennis.
Away from the...
the WTA.
They created the WTA.
Holy crap. I did
and,
not know this is exciting.
Yeah,
this
really
is breaking news.
Great
that broke
history.
30 years
and
ago.
And it's probably what... really supported the cause yeah. for Title IX. But they were my inspiration at eight. It was 1969.
Yeah.
I just gave you my age.
Who cares?
I watched them on TV. I was
it's
an
so
athlete.
Great.
You know,
yeah.
I had two brothers, a dad, a mom who always wanted to be an athlete, but
couldn't
only be a
yeah.
pep girl.
Yeah.
And so we just threw footballs. We played baseball, basketball.
Yeah.
And so the one place that was acceptable for women to be
sure.
athletes was tennis.
Yeah.
We wore skirts. So we were still women when we played tennis.
Every time I have to wear a skirt in my life, I look down at myself and I just feel like a woman yeah. dressed as a man who identifies as a woman.
We can talk about that later.
I hate skirts. I can't even tell you. I'll rock a dress at a wedding, but I hate
skirts. What about the frilly underwear that we had to wear?
Oh.
The frills, they tickled.
And now when you look at these these ladies now, they're first of all, their bodies are so fit. It's insane. And
they can
just,
be what they want.
They can wear
really
what they
great.
Want. They can do like the crotch shots alone are unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm like, could you pull the camera back out a little bit from Sharapova's underwear?
Yeah.
Or no, could you? Nope. Don't. You don't have to pull that. No. No, it's unbelievable. All right, so I did not know nine women launched women's professional tennis.
Yeah, it was actually the first women's pro sport, too. So it opened up the door for every pro sport later on, you know. And and they demanded equal pay.
Yeah.
Billie Jean King, which
just
crossed
happened.
Over. And, yeah. Well, no, it's still working.
Well, no, I mean in the majors.
Oh, in tennis. I'm just talking about equal pay across the board.
Yeah, the Billie Riggs.
Really,
Bobby Riggs.
Yeah, Billie Jean. Billie Jean. Conflated. That's an important match. That was a really important match for feminism. I lecture on that. Anyway.
That's awesome.
But the equal pay argument was made first by Billie Jean King in tennis. Really argued on a national level. And I would argue translated into equal pay in all professions.
Yeah.
Non-sport professions even.
That's amazing.
She's a hero.
If there's a couple of women that every single woman, sports fans or not, should just be like, she's a total hero.
She sports.
Billie Jean King is... I wouldn't be playing anything I would playing today if it wasn't for Billie Jean King.
Playing or business. You know, She any kind of professional pursuit. Billie Jean King opened the doors.
Yeah.
And Hillary Clinton really acknowledges her as that important. She won just recently the National Medal of Honor by the President of the United States for her work for gay and lesbian rights, sports, and also just the general women's rights.
So. And then, she could have just, went out like, all right, I'm done playing whatever. The work she still continues today, just in the last couple of years, or with Venus Williams. And then I think we've mentioned on a podcast I had with Jocelyn Hughes, who's a tennis instructor and actually works for the USTA.
Oh, okay.
She was a great guest. We're saying, and it was on the 9 for 9, the Venus Williams 9 for 9, which I loved so much. How Billie Jean King was instrumental yet again after all these years, and Venus stepped up to the plate. That's why I love Venus Williams so much.
She's awesome, yeah.
Going into a meeting with all the heads of the French, Wimbledon, U.S., Aussie. No player had ever gone into a basically a business meeting, and was like, We need equal pay. And I think the last holdout was Wimbledon. Was Wimbledon. And they got it. They got it. And that's, again, Billie Jean King.
And the whole U.S. Open Center is named after her. Not just a court, but the entire center, it should be.
Yeah.
That's huge. So
that
for
is
a
huge.
Woman to,
I know. So you're 8, 9 years old. You're looking up to these women.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, I can do this. Now, where were you? You're in California, right?
Fresno.
In Fresno.
Not
the hot
known
spot.
For a tennis.
The hot spot of...
The belly button of California.
The belly button of California. All right. So you're playing and... all right. So then you just start... I mean, because it's a totally different path, right? You know what I mean? If you're like, just playing. But when you make that decision at such a young age, your whole life probably changes. You know? I mean, just as far as discipline and matches and it's a whole different route.
Yeah. Well, I, for instance, in the mornings before school, I'd get up, at 6 to go train, running and sprints. And I had a friend, Mallory Lynch, who, would get up at 5:45. So then I would get up at 5:30. And then she'd get up at 5:15.
Oh my God.
I know, we had this competition of who got to the club earlier to train. And then, that went on for years.
Well, clearly you pushed each other.
Yeah, clearly we could.
So then you went pro at, high school for you, which is training. And then.
Yeah, I played 1 year on my high school team. And they unfortunately didn't, the coach was a non-tennis player really. Didn't. Encouraged me to allow me to work out on my own, which I really needed to.
Yeah.
So I felt bad about that. But I graduated early from high school so I could go on the tour.
Okay.
And I went to night school. I wore tennis clothes to school so I could get home fast and just get on the court.
Yeah.
I was a really sports dork.
And so, sports dork is the greatest term ever because I... all I want to do hang out with sports dorks. Okay, so you're 18, so then you start this tour.
I started 17. The Avon circuit. It was like the lowest level.
And so who are you playing? Like, who are you playing against?
Oh.
Like, just people that, just for novice sports fans and sports fans, that we would know.
Well, at that time, you know, entry level athletes, yeah. Tennis players. I mean, it wasn't until a couple of years later, the entry level would be somebody like Gabriella Sabatini would play the entry level $10,000 to $50,000 tournaments.
Oh, wow.
And so you
like as warm ups.
Well, it's just to accumulate your points. You move up in the
rankings.
In the rankings. Okay. So I don't even remember. Most of the players were college players that aspired to turn pro.
Okay.
And I was 17. It did get me exposure to the coaches for scholarship potential. So that was good.
Oh, so you're thinking, so what about, so college, you're like, that's just, you're going to put that off. You're going to go pro and then.
Well, no, I thought I'd go 2 years in college, which most of us did.
Okay.
And then turn pro. Cause I wasn't actually a very good student, believe it or not. I was terrible.
I like that you're a professor now. And you're like, I know. A really good student.
Well, I found myself.
Yeah.
But at UCLA, I had only intended to go 2 years, and I got a full scholarship offer there.
Okay.
Actually, on my birthday, she called.
That's amazing.
It's another story that's kind of fun. But she called me to offer me this full scholarship on my birthday. I said yes, because it was my dream school, because both my parents went there.
Yeah, of course.
And I said yes, and I thought 2 years and turn pro. And,
okay.
I don't know. I failed school my first quarter. I was on what they call STD.
No.
Yeah. Seriously. No. Subject to dismissal.
Okay. I'm glad they changed that.
Yeah, that was in 79 before STDs, as we know them now, came into form.
Oh my God. I was on STD. It's actually not as bad as it sounds. I mean, it's bad academically, but other than that, physically, I'm feeling fine. Oh my God. That's hilarious.
So my competitive juices kicked in with school.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. They translated over there.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden I wanted to do well in school. And so I found that the discipline in tennis translated over to school too. I just hadn't developed skills in school. Note taking.
Yeah.
Listening.
You know, just basic paying attention, awareness, doing homework.
And I found history was something I just loved. My whole family, that's something that we all, my family loves. So I started doing better in school. And then once I kind of had that crossroads of turn pro, I decided I would go on the pro circuit. That you can play on the pro circuit as an amateur.
So okay.
I played on the pro circuit mostly during the summer, but, you know, our whole team was all pro bound.
Okay.
So we all played in the fall and, you know, whenever we had some time.
So you could play, I mean, cause you
can't
now,
take money,
right? Oh, no. you still can, but you can't take money.
Right.
You can have a full ride to UCLA or whatever.
Right. And it doesn't jeopardize. You can play the tournaments,
but on an amateur status and not make, okay. Even if you win the whole thing, you're not going to get paid.
Bummer. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I gotcha.
So,
but that level of competition is so exciting. I mean, right? Because it's like the old adage, like, you know, if you want to get Blair, it's like a tennis thing. It's like just play someone else better than you. Whatever.
Right. Yeah. Always. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was my life. So I decided to stay in college.
Okay.
And I finished my eligibility in 4 years, but I had a fifth year left.
Okay.
So this is going to tie to the Australian.
Okay.
When I played, the Australian was in the fall. And it was I never played the Australian Open. It was the only Grand Slam I didn't play.
Well, a lot of people, I just pause for right here.
Yeah.
Last night when I was watching the Australian Open, you know, Mark Recourt, 24, still number one, 24 championships. But, and this, I wanted to like, you know, double check, but it was said as a fact, but I thought it was a little bit of a slight on Mark Recourt, but I think it was just from a historical perspective.
Right.
The announcer said, well, it was sort of like 24 championship asterisk scroll down. A lot of people did not go to the Australian
did they say
Open.
That?
They
that
did.
Was, yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like,
expensive.
I gotta ask Karen about that because they were saying a lot of top players didn't play in the Australian Open because obviously it's Australia.
Yes. I was one of the top players that didn't play.
And then she cleaned up, I guess I'll have to, you know, look up, how many Australian titles, you know, Margaret Court. Meanwhile, I keep thinking Margaret Court's British, but she's Australian.
Yes, she's Australian.
So I was like, that's interesting. I didn't even think about that. But it's very hard to compare. You know what I mean? Like different times, different game.
Right.
I feel like it gets, I feel like, you know, you can make some arguments like, let's talk about, you know, I guess what I'm saying is it's very hard to take like, okay, a Serena Williams and be like, hey, let's talk about what it would be like if Margaret Court and Serena Williams,
but yeah, you can't
like, you can't, when people do that, you're like, right. Or, you know, to say, well, a lot of people didn't go to Australian Open. So maybe Margaret Court's 20. I'm like, she won 24.
Right.
You know? And so I'm not saying that's not something.
She won other titles where everybody did play.
Exactly. Right. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think you can say like, okay, comparing, you know, games of the last maybe 10, 20 years, you know what I mean? Like, I'd love to see those are just matchups. Like, I'd love to see, you know, Navratilova and Everett play Serena, but you know, right. I mean, but it's, you know, I thought it was like a little slight on Margaret Court, but I don't think he meant it that way. I think it was just like historical perspective.
Well, no, and there's no way to compare. The only match that I'd say comes close to that, a real match that happened was, oh gosh, darn. What's her name from Switzerland? Come on. Why am I forgetting?
What, current?
No, the 90s.
From Switzerland.
Yeah.
Oh, a Graf? She's German.
Graf played...
Hingis?
Hingis, right.
Yeah,
thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
yeah. And Hingis was dissing on Graf.
I couldn't stand her. And I couldn't stand her. Hingis, I literally, I hate to use the word hate, but I could, I literally, she'd start playing, I'd be like, oh, she was miserable.
She was miserable. And she dissed great.
Yes.
Our tennis greats. And she dissed Steffi Graf after Steffi had kind of retired because of a back injury.
Yeah.
Well, Steffi came back and played the French Open, and after a year and a half off, and just tuned everybody.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, because Hingis was saying, oh, you know, that's an old style tennis. You'd never be able to compete with us now. So it was the closest to that sort of old.
Yeah.
I just loved it that Steffi
I loved Steffi.
She's so wonderful.
I was not,
gal.
You know, when it's like, you know, when you get favorites and... Mm-hmm. Like for instance, Federer in the beginning of his career, I was just so on board with Federer. It was like new, fun, fresh. Anyone that could beat Sampras. I never liked Pete Sampras. I appreciate Pete Sampras. Yeah. I mean, he's one of the absolute greats.
Right.
I'll give you the match where he barfed on the court, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But just never a fan. Like I just loved bigger personalities.
Right,
like Sampras always looked like he was crapping his pants the entire, and I was just like, oh, get over yourself. And he just seemed like he had like a big ego, and I wasn't a Sampras fan. Uh-huh. Anyway. So when Graf comes along, early Federer, I loved, but then I thought, I don't know how Federer gets into these coliseums with the ego on Federer. I mean, so stitching in the 17, playing Roddick in that Wimbledon final, I will never, I was like, fuck you. I wanted Roddick to win so bad, I couldn't even function.
Yeah, a lot of people, it was a turning point for their...
I literally was just like, I wasn't a fan anyway, but then like that, I was just like, get over yourself.
He has really nice hair though.
Well, he's a beautiful man. And now in his twilight, the last year or two, I'm like,
you're rooting for him again.
I'm like, Federer. You know what I mean? It's like that. So Graf to me, she was beating everyone I loved.
Right.
And she was just this machine.
Yeah.
And I appreciated her. But in the last couple of years of Steffi Graf's career, when she wasn't winning absolutely everything, you just get sick of people winning the whole thing. I just fell in love with Steffi Graf. I thought she was just I feel lucky to have seen Steffi Graf's career.
And you are. She's actually my. I would arrange my day around watching her play. And she, even at the height of her career.
Yeah.
At, number one for what?
I don't know. 80 years in a row.
I was going to say 82. Yeah. she would do things like, you know, we had practice courts, and if she was right before me, a lot of the top players would play into your practice time.
Oh, yeah.
And this happened a couple of times where I'd come up and she'd say, oh, is my time up? And she'd get right off. And other players wouldn't. I mean, that I was low on the tour. I was a journeywoman player.
Journeywoman.
And so, you know, that kind of regard and respect for a player, whether they're one, it wasn't across the board. That was
that's
distinctly
amazing. That's so
Steffi
awesome.
Thing. Yeah.
So
always left an impression on me.
I think I've said this, but maybe I've only said this once before in the podcast, but one of my favorite Steffi Graf moments was, I was in Brooklyn. So this is probably like late '90s, you know, and I was watching the match, you know, pick a match with my best friend, Carrie. We're big tennis fans. And, right in the middle, like she starts to serve and someone screams out, Steffi, will you marry me?
Oh, yeah.
And she pauses and she goes, how much money do you have?
That is so
And
quick.
I literally, like, we were just like, it was the first time you had any sense that she had a personality, right, or sense of humor or something. And still with the German stoicism.
And so smart, too. Just
yeah,
really
and I
smart.
Literally, like, and she kind of cracked a smile, and I was like, have we misread Steffi Graf? And then goes on to marry Agassi, and I was like, I think I full... It's hard. I mean, not to be stereotypical, but with that German facade, right, it's like, you just think they're, like, literally just about to, like, you know, bulldoze, like,
marching,
just like, yeah.
Eastern Europe.
Not I that I blame Steffi Graf, but so talk to me about playing these players.
Well,
like,
I did play Steffi before she was pro.
Wow.
She was a junior.
Holy crap.
And it's my claim to fame that I won that match. And,
no yeah. way, you beat
no,
Steffi
no, no, but
Graf?
She was just a little German tyke. You know,
who
she's
cares?
A little thing. And so.
You guys, I'm talking with Karen Huber, who beat Steffi Graf at one point in time in her career.
The
this
funny
the
thing was
thing
in the, because it was in Germany.
Yeah.
She was just a junior. She wasn't on the tour. And yeah. All the newspapers of the little town thought I was a German because of my name. So oh, it was okay. like, our own, you know, Karen Huber, you know, I have the article. It's kind of funny.
Oh my God.
It was actually headlines. You know.
Wow.
Anyway.
That's awesome.
So I was claimed a German yeah. that day. But yeah, that was, you know, I played around. That was when I was like 19, I think. 19
okay.
or 20. I think she was probably 12.
Still, you beat Steffi yeah. Graf. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Who was your favorite person to play? Like, did you have like a... Did you go back and forth with some of these women? Or like, were you like, oh, I love playing her. Or this one, oh God, she's so hard to play. Or...
There's some players that are really hard to play.
Yeah.
That just, all they do is hit the ball back and run everything down. And you know, you're going to have a 3-hour match, 4-hour yeah. match and probably lose.
Oh,
I mean, I hate to think that I'm going to probably lose
yeah.
but, before I go into a match, but it to pay out so much
yeah.
and to probably not get any return every time you play them. Just their games didn't match mine.
Yeah.
But somebody like Lori McNeil, I don't know if you remember Lori McNeil.
I know the name. Yeah.
I love playing players like that. She's
yeah.
very burst kind of shot, you know, kind of game style,
yeah.
serve and volley. She could hit the winner on you, but then if you just gutted it out for, a 5 or 10
yeah.
shots, you could win the match. And I beat her because and I just love that style of play.
Yeah.
So
I miss serve and volley. It feels like serve and volley has just
volley.
Gone.
Yeah, no, it's gone.
Now it's just power
it's
back.
Just,
like
cause
just
the ball
sitting
sits
on the baseline.
Up so much. There's time to,
yeah.
there's time. And, with the way the ball sits up.
Navi's, I call her Martina Navratilova, I call her Navi. Navi's serve and volley. Now, I only caught the tail end of her career. I was young, but
oh.
I was watching a lot. And
that's
something that, like, I have distinct memories of watching a whole bunch of her, you know, some of the tail end of her career, some of her big matches. But for me, I think... I just wish I had seen like Everett and Navratilova in their heyday.
Yeah.
You know, I was just sort of on the tail end of it.
Great matches. Cause they countered each
yeah,
other. They were like,
yeah.
Ollie and
Frazier.
Yeah. It's a total Ollie and Frazier matchup.
But then they were also, I think that it's either some documentary I saw or maybe a 9 for 9, how they, their friendship, you know,
and
then
evolved.
It sort of evolved
yeah.
and then it tailed off and then now. Yeah. 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 So A lot of backstory.
I got to play Martina once.
Oh my God, tell me
in
everything about it.
And it was the kind of thing, it was at the Virginia Slims of Houston when the Virginia Slims was the circuit
yeah.
Sponsor. And I saw the draw and I had 2 days to think about it.
Wow.
So I thought, do I think about it constantly
yeah.
and try to get mentally prepared that way? Or do I just... forget about it, because you know it's
yeah.
she was number one in the world. That was she's probably the best player ever at that moment.
Yeah,
because she was so dominant. And
who was her doubles partner?
Elise Bergen.
Okay,
great player from Stanford, turned
okay.
pro, great gal. So I decided to not think about it.
Yeah,
and just let it go and enjoy the 2 days as if I wasn't going to be playing the best player of all time,
because
that makes me nervous. I mean,
well, like, yeah, I'm nervous for
yeah,
you.
And you. Even now,
30
my
years
heart
later,
rate
I literally
up.
Like, oh my God, you played Martina. Just pausing really quick. Everyone always asks me, like, you know, who do you want to meet in life and sport? You know what I mean? Basically, mm-hmm. when someone's like, who do you want to sit down and talk to? Like,
right.
everyone's like, you know, from historical, like Lincoln, Abraham. Hitler, yeah. you know, like all the, and I'm like, and I say Martina Navratilova.
Oh, if could I could, if I could actually make
I
it
am
happen.
2 degrees away from Martina Navratilova.
You could do it.
I feel like I'm going to, you know, it's like Derek Jeter. I want to play catch with and talk to like at yeah. length because I've seen every play of his career
it's
and I loved him so
favorite,
much.
Favorite
yeah. I mean, if you're,
player,
yeah.
he's awesome.
I'm again, so lucky to have seen his career. But Martina, for me, in my complete sports fandom is like the trifecta
yeah.
because it's like one of the best ever at her game.
Right.
But then it's this like, it's her story, her backstory.
Right.
So you get the sport. And as a woman, even growing up again, and I wasn't on a professional athlete track. I just played sports my entire mm-hmm. life. There was nothing to watch but tennis.
Right.
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 And then eventually basketball, some college ball, WNBA, but that wasn't until 96, right?
Golf.
So golf, but I didn't get into golf until right. probably 5 years ago. So it was just tennis.
Right.
Like right. you're saying, like you're yeah. playing it, I'm watching it.
Right.
But that's all we had to watch.
Right.
And so Navratilova was like one of my first, like, oh my God, this woman is so fierce and so amazing. Then you get the whole, you know, defection.
Right.
Which is so amazing.
Dramatic. Totally.
Then
dramatic.
You get gay.
Right.
Then you get like female like my head's going to pop off.
Yeah.
So that's why I picked her and I still pick her to talk. If I could talk to one professional athlete, I would talk to her.
I bet you could do
it. Yeah. Just, I'm close.
Yeah,
I'm
close.
I'm very close. If I just write a couple more jokes and yeah. and I'll be gay forever.
Yeah.
I feel like the world should, our worlds should collide.
Yeah.
No, I have a good friend of mine that I do comedy with. That's her friend.
Well, then there you
so
are.
So I'm like, oh my God. She goes, you know what I could, she goes to me, you know, if you're ever in like Fort Lauderdale, she lives uh-huh. in Florida, like I can hook it up. And I go, well, no, I can get on a plane tomorrow.
Yeah.
At any point in time, I could just fly yeah. and meet Martina Navratilova.
She could be the closing yeah. show for Sports Without Balls.
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't that be something?
Oh, my God. All right. So tell us about playing her because
oh,
like
yeah.
that must be like so. God, I can't imagine looking over the, like, you know, you're
I think
like
I think the ball toss or the toss for the who serves first came to me. And so, seriously,
wow.
all I remember is I had sewing machine legs.
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
I was
yeah.
so nervous. And all my friends on the tour knew this yeah. was a big moment for anybody. You know?
Yeah.
And so they were in the stands, and it was packed because it was a night match
yeah.
in Houston, which is big tennis. You
yeah.
know? And so my partner, Trey Lewis, who played at USC,
okay,
great gal, like, great player. We lost pretty badly, but one of my claim to fame is that I aced her.
Oh my God. You beat Steffi Graf and you aced Navi.
I aced Martina.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
You know, she's lefty. She's so good. She's so yeah. good. I mean, one volley that I can remember, she served, I returned, came in behind, and I just remember she just cut this volley between Trey and me, and we both looked at each other and started laughing.
That's amazing.
Because it was like, did you just see what
like,
happened?
What just happened?
No, that was
yeah.
the most
yeah.
extraordinary. I mean, I can remember the
yeah.
the feeling of watching that ball pass me. It was
wow.
just so extraordinary.
When you yeah. when you know you're like in
awe.
The present of greatness.
Awe.
Yeah.
Total awe.
And her serve and volley, I think, is the most beautiful serve and volley.
Best ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
Right?
Male or female.
I mean, don't you think arguably you can say that she's the best serve and volley
best
of all time?
Ever.
Yeah. yeah.
She's great athlete.
Before this podcast gets away from us, I want to talk to you about the Renee Richards
oh,
story,
sure, yeah.
just because it's like such a cool story. And also just, I think it's really informative to all of our sports fans out there because I, you know, it's on like a, you know, in the recesses of the brain, but I couldn't tell you much more than that. So talk to me about, okay, so what we're talking about, you can set us up for this, is one of the first transgender stories in sports, or probably the first,
and actually yeah. one of the first public transgendered stories besides Johansson from, remember the other one? The first public, what was, oh, gosh darn. Anyway.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
It was a very public,
not the male blonde Swede that
yeah,
played.
Yeah, the Swede. No, she wasn't a player, though. She was just a...
Oh, no, I was thinking of a dude that...
No.
Okay, okay.
Anywho, she she came on the tour. It was very controversial because...
Well, let me just set up this real quick. It was a male...
She was Richard Raskin.
It was Richard Raskin. Yeah. And let me just give you a couple stats, sports, because I do like to say some stuff. Because it's an amazing story, and everyone should look this up. And I'm sure there's like 8 documentaries on it, which I'm going to look up immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, it was he grew up in, I'm not sure exactly. Oh yeah, Horace Mann. Wow, we grew up in New York City. Professional, amazing tennis player. Went to Yale, captain of the men's tennis team. Considered to be some of the best amongst the best college tennis players in the country, went pro, and he played your dad.
Okay. So I'll back it up. I'll tell the story. So she was entered the tour. Everyone had remembered her as a man.
Yeah.
So it was very public that it was in this, the fear was that she'd be dominant. She was 42, I think around 40, 42 when she came on the tour. So the concern was that she'd be a dominant tennis player, just what, because of being 6'3", I think, and a very strong person. And so she came on the tour, wanted to play the tour, so there's controversy, but she did get access because there was no protocol.
Yeah, well, it was a Supreme, it was a court case.
Right.
Richards applied to play in the U.S. Open and was denied the right to play in 76. The USTA USTA required all women competitors to verify gender with a bar body test of their chromosomes.
Yeah.
And then later it was later overturned, and then she could play.
Right.
Which is crazy. That sentence alone is a 4-hour conversation.
I'll touch on all that. But so I was playing one of the more, not entry level, but middle, middle Virginia Slims match. And she was a contestant or a player in the tournament. And I drew her for a first round match.
Wow.
And she's lefty like Martina, so you know that's an advantage in my and very tall. And so we were introduced, our match was announced, and she shook my hand and she said, Huebner, is your father Larry Huebner? And I said, yes. Well, I played him in a tournament back in so and so year. So,
oh my God!
So I think we're the only family that my dad and myself played the same person in a different tournament, a different time, and a different gender.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
And she completely annihilated me, and it was a dominant match. And I never had a complaint about her playing on the tour.
Yeah.
A lot of people annihilated me, so it wasn't. So we played actually 3 times against each other.
Wow.
So, you know, there were a lot of other attendant factors, like, you know, we did have a jacuzzi together. But
did she ever talk to you about whole transition?
No. And at the time everybody was kind of mute about it. No one wanted to talk about it. I think she was very confident in her decision, as she should be.
Yeah.
And it had no, didn't hide or wasn't ashamed at all of her body in the locker room. But no one talked about it because this was like early 80s. This is not when, this is when
people barely talk about it now.
It was so stigmatized. It hadn't reached any kind of public acceptance as it is now. It's still, difficult for some people to embrace, but
difficult
but she
for
was
some
a
people,
pioneer.
Most people.
Yeah, most
yeah.
people. She was a pioneer but just to have played her and to know that she played my dad as a man in college or in one of the tournaments was a treat. But the chromosome tests were interesting because what they did was we all had to have our cheek scraped and then go. And, you know, it's a little nerve wracking because I hoped they would take the, capture some female chromosomes so I'd come out as a female. But because we were all a little bit worried about, the test results. And it was, I had my doubles partner at the time. I'm not going to say her name because I don't want to publicly humiliate her. But she has since had a couple children. So she's definitely female. I mean, birth children.
Yeah.
But her chromosome test came out male. And so
it's unreal.
Because, you can scrape different things and different things come up. And thankfully they
and what happened? She was, I mean, like, that's,
well, everybody knew this, she was a, you know,
in the history of sports, this has happened many, many a time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Even like Babe Zaharias, like, they can't pronounce her last name.
Zacharias.
Right. Zacharias. Something.
Babe Dietrichson.
Yeah. Babe Dietrichson before she got married, even though I feel like she should have married a lady.
Yeah. Well, she probably,
she was, you know, dominated every single, yeah, exactly. If there's more options, I mean, world's best golfer, whatever she played,
yeah, right.
She just dominated, and right. They continually went after her for chromosome testing.
Right.
Because they're like, no, there's no woman that could possibly be
that
this,
athletic.
Yeah. Olympics, golf, whatever she picked up. Right. She was at the top of her game.
There's a long history behind that, and we'll have another podcast interview about the history of women in sports. But that's
sooner than later, please.
Anyway, you know.
So, what did they do with the doubles partner?
Well, they knew she was a female because she'd been playing tennis and grown up, but she was really tall, very boyish, you know, figure, not very developed in the different female.
Yeah.
Occupation.
She had small boobs.
Right. Thank you. And she didn't even start her period till her mid 20s. You know, so we all have a mix
going on,
you know.
Yeah.
But they knew it was kind of made it ridiculous is
of
what
course.
It is, but they didn't restrict her from the tour.
It's just unbelievable.
I think she went back and got another scrape.
Yeah. How about scrape somewhere else? I'm a lady. I've got a vagina. We're doing this.
Well,
that's just it's just so unbelievable that
we went through that.
Women have to go through this.
Yeah, like, I don't think they ever gave any tests for men. Obviously,
of course not.
That they weren't fearful of a woman becoming a man trying to compete with men. It wasn't. Yeah. There's quite a few transgendered women on the tour. Not on the tour in tennis now.
Yeah,
and it's acceptable. So it's allowing people to do what they love to do, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. But I can, you know, it was in the Olympics and field. Yeah.
Oh, that poor girl South Africa.
Yeah.
Or wasn't that right? South Africa?
Yeah, I think it was South Africa. Yeah.
And they were just,
it was just despicable.
Despicable. And there can't be some kind of fluid, variety of people that, I don't know.
That's what the Olympics were started.
Well, we're so binary in our ideas. Homosexual, God. Heterosexual.
Yeah.
Male, female. There's no in between. There's no allowance for difference.
It's and every no person is one thing.
No.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Native Americans had three genders, which is interesting.
That's
they gave
awesome.
An allowance, a lot of like 90%. They give allowance for difference. You know, they actually.
I got one leg in, one leg out of so many genders.
Yeah,
I mean, basically, I'll wear a dress, but only if I'm wearing a football helmet.
Right, exactly.
I mean, come on.
At least in holding a deflated football.
Holding a deflated football, which we will get to. I still want to talk a little bit more about tennis. All right, so let's talk about tennis today. Mm-hmm. Last night, I watched some Aussie Open. I had Sharapova. Sharapova beat. I always say her name wrong. Makarova.
Macarena.
Like Macarena.
It's not Macarena. But
it's Maricova.
Makarova.
Makarova,
yeah.
Makarova, who's really good, 10th. And two things that reminded me of. Serena Williams did a press conference, I don't know, a couple years ago. And when it was Serena, like, you know, Serena now less and less, but her press conference is extremely cringeworthy because you have no idea what's going to come out of her mouth,
right.
You know? And you're like, please just say, just don't be any disparaging to people. Just, okay. Because you never know what flies around. But we caught Serena on a good day and they were asking her about her opponent. This is a couple years ago and it was so funny. She goes, you know, honestly, like I'll have to check who I'm playing tomorrow. It's like every time you look over the net, it's just one, it's another OVA.
She did not say that. I did not hear that.
She did because there's like 85 Russians on the tour now.
Right.
So Sharapova was playing Makarova.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just so interesting. Like, obviously, like people, but you're on national TV, like people's body language, and you've seen it your whole life, like playing tennis. Like, so apparently they're working on Makarova's like positive energy in the beginning of matches.
Okay.
And, It wasn't working. It wasn't happening. Sharapova broke her. She looked like she was looking at her coach every 2 seconds. She was just like angry and just started just really poorly. And they're like, the coach is encouraging her to smile more. And I'm like, she looks like this angry Russian, just like lose a point, like everything's going to be fine, like waving at the crowd. But I was thinking like, and then, all right, so that's that one moment was that. And I was like,
she made it in the top 10 with that. I just don't.
So I guess she's got like a little bit of a surly attitude.
Yeah.
And then you have Sharapova on the other side, who now I've become like an insane Sharapova fan. Uh-huh. I love Sharapova because I felt like people were just crapping on her in the beginning because she was this hot, beautiful woman.
Softly easy on the eyes. Yeah.
Oh my God. She's stunning. You know, doing all those Canon commercials and everyone's like, she's going to be another one of those.
It's not porn. Kornikova, but it's Kornikova.
Anna Kornikova, right? They're going to be, she's going to be another washed out, you know, just faint. And the woman has put so much time and energy and fierceness into her career, and she's one of the best ever.
Right.
So I'm always very proud of Sharapova, and I love the way she plays.
Making a huge amount of money on those extras.
Huge amount of money.
Which is perfect.
But the grunting is at I think, an all another level. And I thought, I just wanted to get your opinion on, like,
it's not grunting.
It's like screaming.
You don't want to say what I really...
Having like full orgasms every time she hits the ball. But I thought to myself, like, the negative energy from one side, the screaming from the other side, like, have you ever... Like, that must affect you as a player. Like, or I guess it's like, you just come in and go... You know what I mean? Like, do you... I know you have to be in the zone, right? But it must be affecting when you're on this level of what the other player's bringing.
Well, like the negative energy?
The negative energy or the screaming.
The screaming can be a little bit irritating.
I can't even imagine.
You have to just block it out.
Yeah.
So you just block it out. If you let it bother you, you know.
You're going to lose.
You can let it bother you. And if you just have to block it out. And so many scream now. So few screamed when I was playing.
Yeah.
It's a trained...
Is Hingis...
Hingis was the first. And to me, it's a developed, trained characteristic. Because...
Yeah.
The funniest thing is they grunt, and then, you know, when they are on the run and they can't remember to grunt, or hitting a drop shot, which takes, you know, running to the net and trying to get a drop shot, they forget to grunt. So watch it next time. The kind of shots that they forget to grunt, or not forget, but just don't grunt on. So it's a trained trait. It's something that is culturally acceptable in tennis now.
Yeah.
So girls, I listen to little 7-year-olds, you know, and every shot I'm thinking, you know, just tell her not to do it now. And then she won't do it.
It's so distracting.
It's so distracting for the audience. You know?
I love Sharapova, but I was just turning the sound down.
It's really, hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I see a player dragging their racket or blaming their coach or whatever, that is, I'm happy.
Yeah.
That means I got them. And that means if they even recover, I can still get under their skin.
Yeah.
So, that's a positive thing. That's a positive thing to see your opponent, spiraling down.
And it was the first three games, Karen. It was just funny. It's just funny. There's so many moments in sports that are hilarious. The camera pans, you know, to the, she's a female coach and we'll talk about female coaches in a second. I don't know the name. I apologize. She was like just smiling, trying to exude all this positive energy onto her player. She was like, great. Like it was just like mimicking, and it was the funniest thing ever. And meanwhile, Sharapova just wiped the court.
Right.
With this
woman. 3-2 or something, 2-3. And it wasn't even close.
I watched the first set and then kind of skimmed through the second set because the next match was Madison Keys and Serena Williams.
Right.
And I have to say, even the second set, but primarily the first set, it was tiebreaker. Williams won in a tiebreaker. Was one of the best sets of tennis I've ever seen in my life.
That's
She's 19 years old. This woman, it's like literally watching the future of women's tennis.
Yeah, and how old is Serena? Like
34
so
now.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, or 33.
I mean, bookends. Yeah, it's awesome.
And to see, there was a couple shots. Now, Serena is just an absolute pleasure to watch. Right. I love watching Serena Williams
athletic.
Play.
Just puts
so
it all
athletic
out
and amazing. And and just like, you know, you're just watching one of the greatest players, according to John McEnroe, the greatest player of all time. John McEnroe is so in love with Serena Williams.
Yeah.
It's so funny. But Madison Keys ground strokes for 19. At one point, Serena, you know, bombed, you know, a huge serve. Keys just, and the thing is, Keys is small.
Right.
It's not like she's like gunned out.
Right.
I mean, she's got a fierce body. Like she's, you know, muscular. but just whipped her racket back to the body of Serena on a return that Serena Williams
backed off.
Like, okay, hit it, but it backed her up on the court, and she almost fell. And this girl is 19, and we've heard her name now for the last couple of years, but, like, unbelievable. And Lindsay Davenport. Lindsay Davenport is Madison Keys' coach.
Awesome.
So great.
Yeah, and, you know, she just has the timing to use Serena's power back at her. It's, you know, hoisted by your own petard kind of thing.
Yeah, but, so, I mean, it's so exciting. So it's so exciting to see. Now, it's been the last, like, I'd say, year or two, this influx of, you know, former players being coaches, which
so
is so
great
fun.
To see, young,
see Becker and Ivan Isevich and Michael Chang, Davenport. Right. Like, it's so fun to see all these, like, Ed Berg, to see all these people in the stands. You're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I watched you growing up, and now you're a coach. But they're
senior
saying
citizens.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm like 80. But to see Davenport
with Keys. Right, I'm glad to see you back. Yeah.
And Davenport said when she, I think it's probably only in the last maybe, I don't know, 6 months, a year, that they've been coaching together, or she's been coaching Keys. But she said when she went to hit with Keys, she said it was the hardest hit, like, returns that she's ever felt in her entire life.
High velocity.
And Keys, I wrote this down last night. For the tournament.
That's something to say for Davenport. She hits the ball pretty hard.
I mean, Davenport is one of the hardest hitters of all time, and also has played the Williams sisters.
Right.
Keys in the Australian Open 2015, highest ground stroke speed of 127 kilometers.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. So what is 127 kilometers?
So she's generating energy, not just absorbing it and feeding it back.
Yeah.
Wow.
127,
like
unbelievable. Isn't that amazing?
Stat. Yeah, that is amazing.
I was furiously writing down stats because I was like, oh my God. And then Serena, and then 2 minutes later, Serena hit, I think she's gotten into 140, I believe, but hit like 125, and it looked like she wasn't even breaking a sweat serving.
You know, it was just 10, 15 years ago, the speed of Serena's serve was the top speed of men, you know, some men's serves, a lot of the men's serves. And now women are just breaking all those. It's awesome.
It's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that game, that first match, now Serena kind of took over in the second, but even this is what speaks so highly of Madison Keys. I'm so fired up on Madison Keys right now. I can't even stand it. Just because, you know, it's fun to see new blood. And it's also see some Americans.
Right.
We've
that's what
such
I'm so excited
drought
about.
With
such
American tennis players. Yeah. It's crazy. We
There's
grew up
a reason
on like,
for that, but anyway,
it's just, it sucks, you know? So to see Keys, Keys is down 5-1. She could have just folded.
Right.
Fought off seven match points. Serena had seven match points at 5-1, won 5-2, comes back, wins 5-2, and then fought off like another 2 points, and then Serena won 6-2.
Yeah.
But even in the announcer saying this is the most exciting 6-2 match they've ever they've ever seen. It was just like I'm so fired up on Keys. Well, she's so great.
If you remember, you know, there's no time clock in tennis, so if you can have that attitude, like Keys, you don't know. I have a friend who was up 6-0, 5-0, 40-15 in a match. I won't say her name because it'll bring PTSD back to her. But she ended up losing. This was at the U.S. Open.
Wow.
So there's no time clock.
Yeah.
There's no time
clock. And there's
clock.
Always that. You always know in tennis there's that change.
Right. That can be that change.
Yeah.
That was the greatest comeback ever.
Why can't you tell us?
Oh.
Who cares?
Ann Holbert.
Oh, okay. I don't think
no, you don't even know who she is. But no. Yeah, she's a friend.
Oh, okay.
From a long time. But she said she wanted to quit tennis. Anyway, I think she did quit tennis after that. But she was 6-0, 5-0, 40-15 at the U.S. Open and lost.
But that just shows
there's no time clock. You know.
Yeah.
So if you can have that attitude, just you can come back no matter what the score is. It's the beauty of tennis.
It is the beauty of tennis.
Where, you know, when you can watch a football game, when you watch a basketball game, and it's over, you know, you know, 20 points.
You always know, you're like, oh, my God, that switch.
For Seattle and Green Bay.
That was tough. And the perfect transition because we're nearing the end. Let's talk about... first of all, we haven't touched on so many points. So you have to come back literally in a couple of weeks. We also watch football together.
Yeah.
And, that's a perfect transition. We're days away from Super Bowl.
Right.
So I want to get your pick. And also the cool thing about watching the Australian Open last night, all the balls, were inflated. Yeah. There was no deflated.
Well, that's interesting.
Balls. I talked to Trish Sir. She was my podcast, guest on Monday. We do a lot of podcasts together, and we might have talked about Deflategate for 40 minutes, so we don't need to go into another.
Well, you know, they keep balls, tennis balls in the refrigerator at Wimbledon.
They do.
Yeah, they take them. If we watch when they take out the new balls for changeovers, and they
keep them in a fridge.
They take them out because they want them cold.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sorry, I don't know the reason why, but it does keep them a little bit deflated.
Well, because in any, you know, like the drop in this is the whole stupid Deflategate. They're trying to say like atmospheric pressure. Right. And then and Belichick, atmosphere, you know, and the cold, and it really doesn't deflate that much. Uh-huh. But then now it's like, there also might be like a guy that took the balls out of ball boy attendant.
The poor guy.
It's so stupid. It's so unbelievably ridiculous. It's just, and I know we were saying this Monday, like I'm sure they've been playing with deflated balls the entire season. So many people deflate balls. They mock up the balls. It's just the Patriots, and they get caught again and again and again. It's like just...
The microscope is on them.
I mean, it's just how about you just don't cheat? Yeah. How about you just, you know what I mean? You're going to be under scrutiny. How about you not deflate 11 out of 12 balls to start
There's
a championship
not a sport
game?
Where people don't try to cheat. I mean, biking, something. Whatever.
I'm not saying the Patriots are any different from any other, but it just...
You're going to hate this, but I'm going to root for the Patriots.
Why?
Because I can't stand Seattle.
Okay, so tell me why you don't like Seattle.
Well, first of all, they're the biggest rival to the 49ers, which are my number one team.
Oh, I thought the Steelers are your
they're
number one team.
They're number two, but I root for the Steelers a lot because they're better.
Yes. Okay, so 49ers are your number one team.
But I actually love the Steelers since I was little. I was a big Lynn Swan, Franco Harris.
Lynn Swan.
All about the Steelers then, but I was more about at five. I had my own 49er helmet and jersey.
Yeah.
And
that was like the greatest, like those 49ers.
Oh, that was John
teams.
Brody. I just dated myself again. John Brody. I was always John Brody playing football.
That's awesome.
And so I just, being from California, Northern California, we're kind of lean Northern California, even though we're the middle of you know, belly button thing, but we lean north.
Yeah.
So 49ers.
Of course you hate Seattle. It's like their biggest rivalry.
I'm not a big fan of, Pete Carroll.
Yeah. Carroll is so hot and cold. People have come on this podcast and they're like, they're up Pete Carroll's butt. And then you get people that are just like, no, he's horrible.
What he did to USC was.
Yeah.
He's a fakey wakey. I mean, I think he smiles. He's like,
he is a champion now. That dude
he's a
can coach.
Totally champion.
That dude can coach.
But he obviously with, you know, USC cheated as well to get the better players on board.
That wasn't
he didn't take any responsibility.
And then he left.
And just ditched.
I will never give him any props for that move.
Right.
I do like what he's done with Seattle with the yoga and the therapy and the team bonding.
Oh,
I love that. I do love that. I've bought into all of that.
And I don't know why. I don't care as much. I wanted Green Bay to win so badly. So
I was, you know, it's not like I don't mind Seattle at all. I'm going to cheer for them, but I was just full on, living and dying by that Packer game. And I was super upset.
I was hurt for like 4 days.
Yeah.
It hurt me for like 4 or 5 days.
That I just
the thought of it. Just,
it was just like some of those plays where you're like, it's sort of like, how did that happen? It was one of we watched enough football in our lives like the offside kick, even the extra point or the 2-point conversion.
Point that would have changed the whole game.
That's like a Hail Mary.
How did that happen?
He just like kind of chucks it up.
Just, I could have knocked it away.
I literally was waiting for my mother to run on the field and knock it away. 78. Oh, I literally was like, it's one of those inexplicable things where the only thing is you can say at the end of the game is they were just, comes down to a couple plays.
Destiny, weird.
It's like a destiny, fate comes down to a couple plays and it just changes. Everything changes.
Yeah.
And we talked about this briefly, but it's one of those things where, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm sorry. I always want to be losing towards the end of the game. If when you're whoever's winning, they run 85 running plays, they punt the ball, and the other team just is reckless abandon. You see it in every single sport.
Reckless abandon.
You have nothing to lose, and you just go out there and you play on another level.
Right.
And I you know, want to be down by 12 with 5 minutes left, especially in football. But you know, you see this in NCAA, you see this all the time. Ugh. You see this in tennis. It's like you the person just starts going for it, plays
because
out of their body.
Right. Just
and,
let it go.
And all right. So you're cheering for the Patriots.
It doesn't really matter to me. Cause
I hate the Patriots.
So you're a Giants fan, right?
I'm a diehard Giants fan.
Yeah. So they're kind of rivals.
Yeah.
So I understand.
Yeah.
But I think it's more of such anti-Seahawks.
Of course. If I was a crazy 49ers fan, I'd be cheering for the Patriots.
I'm going to root
against Seattle, but not necessarily for the Patriots. How about that?
I like it. My a really good friend of mine says when she's doesn't really care about the two teams, she says she's rooting for athleticism and team spirit.
Yeah.
I love that. I've always loved that.
I just want the food. The food on the day.
The food's
really
going to be.
Yeah.
I think I said this on Monday, but I am performing on a cruise. I leave on Sunday.
Nice.
And it's all gay men.
Oh.
And I'm like, the game better be on.
Yeah.
The game, there'll be a lot of sports fans on the boat.
Just
obviously.
Tell them it's the most homoerotic space on American culture, American society.
I mean.
No.
It's
reaching
ridiculous.
Between legs.
Oh, it's
falling on each other, slapping butts,
and these,
hugging,
and
kissing.
These men are like homophobic. I'm like, come on, just get over yourselves. I want to talk about one thing, and then we'll do feel good moment of the week. And I feel like we're barely. I have so much more to talk to you about. We'll come back on. first of all, whoever's pulling the fire alarms in the Hotel of New England, good job. Yeah. Keep it up.
I'm okay with that. Yeah.
Marshawn Lynch, he refuses to talk in any of these press conferences. Right. And there's this whole debate now swirling around, like, should he be made to talk? He's fined if he doesn't talk. So he doesn't want these fines. So he'll go down. He'll do all these press conferences, which he has to do by contract.
Right.
And say, I'm just here because I don't want to get fined. And he said it something like 24 times this morning, yesterday morning. Ugh. And they ask him questions and he just repeatedly says, I'm here because I just wanted to be fined. Here's the thing. I'm not saying like all these guys should be forced to talk, but when you're making a gazillion dollars and you have to do some press, I don't need to talk to you. If you're socially awkward, you don't want to talk about the history of football, your family, how you prepare, at least just... I do think they should say something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm so not a fan. I don't know if you noticed in the Green Bay game back there.
Yeah.
But when he made that touchdown, first thing he did, it was kind of cut out, but you could see it in the replay. Totally grabbed his crutch, like, you know.
Yeah. Fine.
F you to all the players. And that's who I think he is. That's probably all he has to say.
Yeah. It's supposedly on First Take, Skip Bayless saw this a report where... he's actually quite eloquent. Richard Sherman's like, he's the leader on her field. He always has something to say. He takes care of like extended family. He's got all this stuff. Like he could talk about. Another thing is, and this is what really gets me effing angry. These guys just blowing off being role models.
Right.
That's what gets me so angry, because you have a high percentage of players, black, white, whatever, that are poor, and all they whatever sport it is, they're just looking to do what they love, support their family,
right,
and just put a roof over their heads. And all these guys they look towards, female and male, but obviously there's 8,000 more opportunities for men, and they look at a guy like Marshawn Lynch. You've all these kids growing up, Marshawn Lynch is their favorite player, and this is how he acts,
right. They're just, and so all they're doing is F you to their
friends. And just saying, and, oh, I don't have to talk. Yeah. I don't have to be a role model. I have to do all this stuff. And it's not just Marshawn Lynch. I'm just saying, I guess what I'm really disappointed in Marshawn Lynch is I love watching him play.
Right. He's an amazing football
sometimes when
athlete.
I see him play, I think this has got to be in contention for one of the best running backs I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
And so you just want him to behave like this is not adult behavior.
A complete human being.
Be a complete human being. Yeah. Just at least give us five questions. Just just be.
And
I hate it. It just drives me insane.
And the power that these players have over influence that they have over young people, embrace it,
because embrace
whether they want to talk in front of the crowd or in front at the press conference. The not talking is influential.
Yes.
So just take the positive side.
Exactly.
They're influencing whatever position they take, positive, negative. And he clearly doesn't care.
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
And it makes me so angry.
Getting his paycheck.
Getting his paycheck, he doesn't care.
Right. And it's just,
it's upsetting.
It's upsetting. Right.
We have reached the end of the podcast. You have to teach America, and I have to jump on a plane to San Francisco. It's a feel good moment of the week. Feel good moment of the week, and I'm gonna say a Madison Keys also feel good moment of the week. It's in tennis, and I hope I don't mess up his last name. A couple rounds ago, Rafael Nadal was playing Tim Smycek, S M Y C Z E K. So it's forgivable sounds that right. I'd Smychek. It sounds 4 hour match, fifth set. Smychek was winning. Then he's down a break. Nadal is serving for the match. On the first serve, someone screams out something to break Nadal's concentration. He heckles him. Now the umpire can't overturn that and give him another first, you know, serve. Smychek stands back and says to him, "It's okay. I'll give you the first serve." I mean, that never happens.
Such a great Nadal act of sportsmanship.
Goes on to win. You know, Nadal is so well spoken. I love Nadal. And he says, points out how wonderful that moment was in sports. Djokovic gets on Twitter. Everyone's getting on Twitter saying, like, that's how the sportsmanship should be. I mean, it was amazing.
Marshawn Lynch should
Hey, Marshawn Lynch, why don't you take a play out of Tim Schmeichel's playbook?
Yeah.
I mean, that to me, that is beyond the feel-good moment of the week.
Right. That is beautiful.
It was, and I'm going to post that. I'll post that. There was like five moments already in Aussie Open for sportsmanship. Mm-hmm. It was really cool. I'll post the link to see those videos. You are fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on.
This is so much fun.
I feel like we're just scratched the surface. You're going to come back on. We'll do history of women's sports, football, more tennis stories.
Terrific.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Great time.
People of America, just enroll in USC so you can be taught by this woman. Everybody out there, have a fantastic week. Enjoy the Super Bowl. This will either air in the next couple of days, or I might save it for next week when I'm on the cruise and I can't probably post an episode. Good luck out there. If you're getting hammered during the Super Bowl, don't get in a car, you a-hole. Take Uber or Lyft, or just put a mustache on someone else's car and make them drive you. Sports Without Balls fans, have the best week of your life.